From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. October is National Seafood Month, and guess which state provides the bulk of this country's seafood? Like more than all the other states combined. If you guessed Alaska, you would be correct. Our fishermen do that. Speaking of fishermen, there is promising news for both Prince William Sound and Kodiak. There could be Tanner crab pots on the ground in both areas after the first of the year. And finally this week, beluga whales in Cook Inlet are struggling for survival as a species. We have two perspectives. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
October is National Seafood Month, a distinction proclaimed by Congress more than a quarter century ago to recognize one of the nation's oldest industries. Government figures show that nationwide, the seafood industry contributes $60 billion, with a B, to the U.S. economy each year. Pacific salmon, sea scallops, shrimp, and lobster contributed the most to total revenue. For poundage, Alaska pollock, menhaden, and Pacific salmon accounted for more than half of the U.S. fish landed. Fishermen can pat themselves on the back, because Alaska deserves special merit during this seafood month, as it produces more than 60% of our country's seafood, more than all the other states combined. The seafood industry is Alaska's number one private employer, and Alaska's seafood industry ranks second only to big oil for the tax dollars it pumps into state coffers.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Crabbers at Prince William Sound could get to drop pots for tanners again in March. Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch has the story.
Biologists are computing the results of the yearly trawl survey that wrapped up in late August and will also do a week-long pot survey in the Western District starting November 1st.
We're getting all our information together so that we can get our estimates and see where we're at.
Jan Rumble is area manager for Prince William Sound and Cook Inlet shellfish and groundfish at Fish and Game and Homer. A month-long fishery in March of 2018 was the first tanner opener in the Sound since 1988. It was allowed under a commissioner's permit that's issued under special circumstances for the western and eastern regions. Rumble says it was sort of a fact-finding mission, prompted by increasing numbers of tanners coming up in subsistence pots and a lack of survey data.
There were concerns raised by industry that the department's existing trawl survey does not reflect what's happening with tanner crab abundance in areas outside of those survey grounds.
15 permit holders participated for the 30-day fishery.
And the total harvest from the fishery is about 83,000 pounds, with an overall catch per unit effort of 12.5 crabs per pot, and an average weight that was derived from our port sampling, and that was 1.87 pounds.
In anticipation of the trial opener, the State Board of Fisheries in 2017 adopted a harvest strategy for tanners that's linked to legal male crab abundance estimates in the trawl survey. Based on the harvest from last season and pending survey results, Rumble says managers are pretty confident there will be another commissioner's permit fishery in Prince William Sound next March.
And Lainey has good news for tanner fishermen in Kodiak as well.
Signs are pointing to another Kodiak tanner crab fishery in January. Managers are still scrubbing the data from the annual survey, but the early numbers are looking good.
We've got this big group of crab, so that's encouraging for 2019, meaning that maybe we could get 2 years of fishing on this group of crab. That's what we were communicating last year.
Nat Nichols is area shellfish manager at Fish and Game in Kodiak. Last January saw the first Tanner fishery after a four-year closure.
That big pulse that we saw in 2013 was the largest estimate in the survey time series. In Kodiak, we estimated 200 million crab in the water. And again, those are very small, you know, the size of a nickel. They don't survive well. Everything likes to eat a small Tanner crab. We see about 90% of them drop out of the population.
The tiny crabs seen in the surveys are 1 to 2 years old, and they grow another 5 years before they legally can be taken. Nichols says Tanner numbers also are looking up at Chignik and the South Peninsula. But for now, those regions are likely to remain closed.
That was Alaska Fish Radio's Lainey Welch.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC@AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
Federal wildlife managers organized an event in September based on a really basic principle. You're more likely to care about something if you can see it. Nat Herz with the Alaska Energy Desk has this story about the Army of Citizen Scientists that assembled last month to count an endangered species near Anchorage.
On Saturday morning, I was standing with a bunch of college students at a pullout off the Seward Highway, just south of Anchorage. We were looking for beluga whales as part of a count organized by federal managers. Okay, there was actually a 2-minute break where I made a phone call, so I missed the whales. But I asked Brooke Faulkner about it afterward. She's one of the students.
And then all of a sudden, I was like, it's right there! It's like within 50 feet of us. And
really?
I was like, yeah!
Faulkner says she saw two belugas. Scientists estimate that there are about 330 in the inlet, down from more than 1,000 a few decades ago. The federal government named Cook Inlet beluga whales as an endangered species in 2008. Biologists think hunting originally caused the decline, but even though it stopped, the population hasn't recovered, and scientists aren't exactly sure why. John Kurland works with NOAA Fisheries, the agency that's responsible for protecting the whales. I talked to him Saturday at an overlook at Point Warren's off, where he and a colleague were beluga spotting.
They just didn't bounce back the way we expected they would. So the question then is, once you remove that immediate source of mortality, if they're not bouncing back from that, what else might be hindering them? And again, is it food? Is it noise? Is it contaminants? Is it something else that we just haven't thought of yet?
Federal managers say they think events like the count are helping to build public support for belugas. Here's Donna Weeding, a top NOAA fisheries official who is also at Point Warren's off.
We all care about tend to care about things that are in our backyard, right? And things that we can see and that we take some sort of ownership in the sense of yes, we care about these species because we can see them.
Julia Grindstaff says that idea makes sense to her. She was also at Point Warren's off on Saturday. She moved to Anchorage a few years ago and says she got way more excited about belugas after she saw them in Cook Inlet.
I've been landlocked in Illinois and Colorado, so when I came here and actually saw the belugas, oh my gosh, it was pretty amazing. And it does make it more real to you than just seeing it on television or hearing about it.
Organizers said they had just under 2,000 people show up who spotted an estimated 100 whales. From a beluga-less spot on the Seward Highway, I'm Nat Herz.
A University of Alaska Fairbanks researcher thinks he may have the answer to what's going on with the beluga whales in Cook Inlet. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, recent research by University of Alaska Fairbanks master's student has turned up a shift in diet in the Cook Inlet belugas that may help to explain part of the decline.
Mark Nelson is a wildlife biologist at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He spent much of his career working with marine mammals, and he says biologists in the 1990s noted a dramatic decline in Cook Inlet belugas. It was a mystery because the population wouldn't recover despite protections, including putting them on the endangered species list. Nelson decided to tackle the question for a master's thesis at UAF. An obvious place to start was diet. In biology, you are what you eat. Diet is captured in bones and teeth. Drawing on beluga samples collected in the 1960s at the UA Museum of the North against more recent samples, he tested for carbon and nitrogen isotopes that would suggest dietary shifts. He found them. But then he and his colleagues took an unusual step in sampling for strontium,
which is a common isotope used in geology, but it's not all that common in biology. And we were able to apply it to this project to determine that there have been some fairly significant changes.
Nelson says the strontium reveals that Cook Inlet belugas are now taking more of their prey from freshwater sources rather than the ocean. He says the discovery is an important piece of the puzzle.
And we're trying to gather a few more puzzle pieces as we kind of build this thing and try to really understand what happened in the past and maybe what's preventing this population from recovering.
Nelson and his colleagues published their findings in the Journal of Endangered Species Research. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Baby Baloo in the deep blue sea. Swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above, sea below, and the little white whale on the go. Is the water warm? Is your mama home with you? So happy. Way down yonder where the dolphins play, where you dive and splash all day. Waves roll in and the waves roll out. See the water squirting out of your spout.
Many listeners will recognize that song immediately, Baby Beluga by Raffi, which was released in 1980. It fits in with the Federal Wildlife Manager's principle that you'll care about something more if you can see it. It said that Raffi was motivated to write Baby Beluga after meeting Kavna, a baby beluga whale that he saw at the Vancouver Aquarium. While a song may live forever, whales, unfortunately, do not. Kavna died of cancer at the Vancouver Aquarium in 2002 at the age of 46.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Nat Hertz with the Alaska Energy Desk, Robert Hannon with KUAC in Fairbanks, and Lainey Welch of Alaska Fish Radio. Be safe fishing, celebrate National Seafood Month, and don't forget to always wear your life vest underway so that you can celebrate National Seafood Month next year. As always, a big thank you to everyone who helps make this program possible each week, including our listeners and the stations that air the show. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.